I'm Chris Lindstrom, and this is the Food About Town podcast. In episode 66 of the Food About Town podcast, I talked to the fine gentleman from Fifth Frame Brewing, which is going to be located on St. Paul Street in the heart of Rochester, New York. So we had Wade Reed, Jared Foster, and John Mervine over. And this was formerly Split Batch. They had to change the name to Fifth Frame. So we talked a little bit about that. And we went more into depth about the equipment they're procuring, the space where everything's going in, and more about where their status is and how they're doing right now. So this is one of the more exciting businesses coming in Rochester in the in 2017. And hopefully in warmer months 2017, we'll see more from Fifth Frame and get a chance to check out their space and check out their space in action. So follow the guys on social media, search for Fifth Frame. If you're into the coffee side of things, also keep an eye out for some bonus content coming soon on the Food About Town podcast feed. I recorded a roasters discussion at Joe Bean Coffee, and there was four different roasters, one from Gimme Coffee, Joe Bean Peaks, and also Public Espresso out of Buffalo. So it was a really fun discussion, went about 2 hours, so I'm going to post that separate. And if you're really into coffee, you should definitely check this out. It was a great time and a lot of interesting questions asked as well. So take a listen for that. And you can follow me on Facebook, Food About Town, at Stromy on Twitter and Instagram. Thanks for listening. All right, so John feels like a nesting hen, so we're ready to podcast. So we're here with people who have been on before, but under a different name. So we're here with the gentleman from Fifth Frame. Is it Fifth Frame Brewing? Is there a third word to that Fifth Frame thing?
Well, I guess if we're going to be specific, it's Fifth Frame Brewing Co., LLC.
I think the LLC is the most important thing, right? Really rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
So for the sake of reintroductions, why don't you introduce yourself first, since you're to my left.
Hi, guys and girls. I'm John Mervine, one of the guys from Fifth Frame Brewing.
And he's ruining the microphone already.
As usual.
Getting adjusted.
All right, and across the table.
Hi, everyone. I'm Wade Reed. I am one of the guys from Fifth Frame Brewing.
That's your official title, one of the guys.
One of the guys.
One of the guys.
Them guys.
Me.
And to my right.
Oh, it's Jared Foster. Part three of the guys.
Part three of the guys. So, hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, Chris. Hi, Chris.
How's it been going? Last time I talked to you, it was the NBA Finals, so it was approximately June.
Oh, my God.
Christmas. That was the last time we sat down, and it's been a few months. So, what's the haps? What are we into right now? Actually, let's take one quick step back. Let's say what Fifth Frame is, and so as a reintroduction, then we'll talk about where we're at today. So, who wants to give the quick introduction?
I'll do the quick intro. Fifth Frame Brewing Company is a hybrid specialty coffee roaster and craft microbrewer that will be opening in the St. Paul quarter of Rochester, New York soon.
Warm weather. We are not here.
Warm weather 2017. We are not here to announce the official date as much as we'd like to.
That was the number one question other people asked me when I told people you'd be on.
I imagine. I mean, it's the number one. Let's yeah, that that's the number one question. Bag. It's warm weather 2017. So, basically, what we're doing is we're trying to take specialty coffee culture in Rochester and give it a new context in the craft microbrew culture, which is really a global, national phenomenon. And we want to make coffee the fifth ingredient, give give all our beers a coffee spin. So that's the main idea from that. Many other stranger ideas.
Yeah. Well, so who wants to address the... So last time you were here, you were a different name. And obviously you had to change your name partway through. What deal with that?
So what happened with that was an ongoing back and forth between our team and another team who had a previous trademark with that name. And after many months of... radio silence. We finally got the ball moving. Took some time back and forth. Long story short, when it came to terms, the consensus was that we didn't have an even ground that we agreed on. So at that point that we realized that, you know, is it really worth any more effort and agonizing over and, you know, stretching it out, kind of said, you know, let's go back to the drawing board, clean slate. And, you know, it took a few weeks and threw a lot of ideas together and came out with Fifth Frame.
Because, I mean, the process had to have been hard the first time coming up with a name.
I don't think it wasn't. It was really easy.
So it actually did hit right away?
It was, what, like 4 o'clock in the morning?
Something
drinking
like, yeah.
Drinking a lot of beers and bowling came up and... We all just kind of lost it.
Yeah.
There was a lot of laughter on that.
Yeah, we got very excited about it because it just kind of happened. You know, it was one of those that just happened. You know, like we weren't just sitting like this and this and this and this and this and this.
It wasn't an agenda item.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it just kind of happened very naturally.
Which meant there was no pressure.
Right. Yeah.
But also made the name a little esoteric, I think. Right. Like Spit Batch was a little bit personal to us and made sense to us. And sometimes I would find myself trying to describe it to others. And it was more difficult than I thought it should be. I was like, no, this totally makes sense. You just need to see it this way. Not everyone has our experience vis-a-vis bowling, brewing, coffee, everything that kind of made it make sense.
All at once, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I kind of get that. I'm working with that same thing with the startup I'm working on. And it's sometimes you have to tell the story before you tell them the name. And then it kind of makes sense.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit, it can be a little bit jarring sometimes. So the second time around probably wasn't as organic, I'd imagine.
Not the first two
for the
name
yeah.
ideas.
Right.
You know, we had a few, you know, like it. We tried to do that. And we're like, all right, we need a name. Let's sit and come up with a name. And, you know, like we had one. We're like, yeah, or this. Yeah. And then we just kind of forgot about it for a little bit, you know, like thought about other things. And then I think this actually weighed.
Yeah, I think I was actually
made it make sense.
Looking something else up
mm-hmm.
for
well, because we're always looking at bowling terms.
And then I sent that screen cap to you guys that was bowling. Like the Fifth Frame was traditionally understood as the beer frame, and I was like, wait a minute. So John, why don't you lead us into why Fifth Frame makes so much sense for us?
Oh, be happy to. So
we're trying to build. By the way, we're trying to build a soundboard in the background here. So anytime you hear a noise coming from one of the people, we're trying to build a soundboard in the background. So,
Fifth Frame, you know, keeping with the number idea, you know, traditionally or historically, we'll say in brewing, there's four ingredients: there's water, there's malt, there's hops, and there's yeast. We said traditionally or historically, for that matter. So. What we're doing is because we're a microbrewery with such a strong coffee program, the idea of coffee as an ingredient as opposed to, you know, a secondary or tertiary flavor and an afterthought, you know, making that into the beer as a fifth ingredient. And no, asterisk, not every beer will have coffee in it, only when appropriately deemed so. That's a question that often comes up as well. But so there's the fifth, and then with the Fifth Frame with that cap, the screen cap that Wade sent over that day, it was like, wow, you know, bowling is, you know, the pin carried over from Split Batch because it's the one icon that really ties all of us together. You know, Wade's, you know, having roots with a family with a bowling alley in the Midwest. Jared growing up in a couple bowling houses around the greater Rochester area. And I started bowling when I was 3 and bowled into college and thoroughly enjoyed it and still do.
Actually, I just want to take a step and... I didn't know your family owned a bowling center or centers.
Yeah, they actually owned the only bowling alley in my hometown.
Really?
And my grandfather opened it and sold it to his sister and brother-in-law, who owned it until I was in high school. And then so my grandfather's brother-in-law, my uncle, and we called him Uncle Vic. He passed away at that time. Ownership passed to his son, and we had, I think, up to that point, we had every single family Christmas at the bowling alley.
And That's awesome.
And I distinctly remember one year bowling 46 games because I was in high school. And I didn't want to talk to any of my family because that was me in high school. I ended up bowling like one game all in between my legs, one game all with my left arm because my right arm was basically dead. The next day, I could hardly use my right shoulder. So, those are my bowling roots. That's kind of where it all goes back to for me.
That's fantastic. I didn't know that. So I didn't know there was such a strong bowling tie. I thought it was just kind of convenient with the rest of it.
I mean, but who doesn't love bowling?
Well, I mean, I can't say I love bowling. I
but it's one of those.
I tolerate it.
Well, yeah, but it's one of those sports you don't have to be good at to do. You know,
you can keep bowling in the world
if you want. I mean,
says
it's fine.
Chris,
you can have it if you need it.
Oh, but I love that tie. I mean, it feels more organic now that I know that, and it makes more sense. And sometimes it helps to tell that part of the story where you see, oh, okay, this is a real tie between the three guys. And that's kind of builds upon that a little bit, gets you to know everybody a little bit better.
Something that I've learned, especially while telling the story and sharing the name is, you know, I don't, anybody north of, anybody who, let's just say it this way, anybody born before 1975 understands what the beer frame is. And, you know, the fifth frame, you know, in bowling was always, you know, the if you didn't strike or the lowest score buys the next round. So telling it to, you know, our generation, a little bit younger, you know, it's they get it. But anybody north, you know, before 1975 was like, "Oh yeah, like beer frame."
Of course, I totally get it.
Like so it's like a eureka moment. So there's a little nostalgia to that as well.
Sure. Well, so speaking of nostalgia and then pointing towards where we're at today, I'm not sure that was a good pivot, but I'm doing it anyway.
I was going to say, I don't know where you're going with
that. No, that was bad. That was a
bad pivot. I
don't
even know what day it is.
I might have an idea.
That was a bad pivot, but I'm doing it
anyway. He's
looking
at you.
No, this way, Jared. Look this way.
Yeah, it's okay. Don't be confused.
Where's the mic? I lost it.
So we talked about the name change, and let's talk about what you guys have been working on. It's been 6 months since we talked on the podcast. What's been going on? What's the process?
What's been cooking, Jared?
Yeah.
Oh, me.
Yeah.
Cooking.
Cooking.
I don't know. I mean, trying everything. Right now I'm working on trying to make vegan donuts because I have friends that are vegan, and I like them, so I thought I'd try that for them, not for me.
Gonna say because I mean you've had some, you know, small, what do you call, pop up events at different locations during different
At Ugly Duck, and that's what kind of spawned that. You know, like Rory has helped us a lot with a lot of things, and I wanted to make him something. You know, like that is, you know, he's one of the vegan people, and you know, like every time I would bring stuff in, he gets a lot of vegan customers and things like that, and you know, so we drop stuff off and people kind of get excited, and he's like, "Oh no, they're not. They're not. You can't even look at those. You'll melt." You know. So I thought, you know, like I got to make something not just for me and my 2-year-old. So
yeah,
though your 2-year-old still loves the vegan
any
donuts. I am a witness.
Ground garbage bin donut. I don't know. She doesn't care.
The George Costanza in the making, folks.
Yeah,
she's not a hard sell. But
nice.
Working on that stuff. That's about it at the moment.
I mean, you've been working on donut recipes in general, right?
For like 2 years.
So what's the biggest challenge been so far with building the recipes? And obviously you're trying a bunch of different stuff. So
do you really want to know?
Of course. Always.
Trying to make donuts with a 2-year-old.
Who loves donuts?
Who loves donuts?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's so many places now in Rochester that are doing donuts and things like that. So watching them, seeing what they're doing, and trying to figure out how to do it different than them.
Yeah, because we kind of hit the craft donut thing while you guys were building
awesome,
out.
But sucks at the same time.
Yeah, it's kind of, we kind of hit that all while you were developing and getting ready.
Right.
You know, there's three places now that hit kind of the same thing.
Yep.
So how did that strike you? I mean, it's kind of got to be a little bit frustrating.
It was irritating. It was like, well, you know, I guess if there's that much of a want for it, then obviously we chose the right idea. It's not the only thing that we're going to be doing as far as food goes. You know, that was just something fun to do. And who doesn't like donuts? You know, it's fun. But yeah. that's only, you know, that's a small amount of the food.
Yeah, it's a core thing. A core thing, but it can't be everything. When it's everything you do, right, it does get old pretty fast.
Yes.
It's a good novelty, and it's a good thing to have around all the time, but it does, unless you have, I don't want to say substance, because they can be great, but unless you have the other stuff, it kind of doesn't balance.
Right.
Did you say sustenance?
Substance.
Sustenance?
Because we're doing breakfast sandwiches, too.
Ooh. Mm. I mean, breakfast sandwiches is one of my favorite food groups.
Me, too.
Isn't it like chiseled into the food pyramid?
Yeah,
it's somewhere on the bottom. It's a.
It has to be.
No,
on the
it's
bottom.
Actually a. It's its own pyramid above the pyramid.
It's like it on the dollar bill, isn't it?
Every other food. It
is the eye of the pyramid.
Wait, is this the conspiracy part of the podcast where we talk about the Bilderbergs and things?
Oh, yep. Too soon.
Yeah,
maybe I didn't hear yet.
Speaking of which,
our Illuminati breakfast sandwiches.
I'm going to name a breakfast sandwich now. The Illuminati.
The Illuminati, yes. Breakfast sandwich.
You just have to tell me what's on it.
Because it's got Marvel comics references, too. It does. So,
ooh.
You know I'm down.
Oh, speaking of which, so this is a complete tangent. I've been watching all of the Marvel Netflix TV shows.
Don't ruin it.
They're so good.
Which one's your favorite?
Oh, jeez. I started actually with Luke Cage, which is way out of order.
Way out of order.
Very.
I think I like Jessica Jones the most. I thought it was
fantastic.
That's
what everybody says, and I don't feel the same. I don't feel the same.
It's really dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's a little more psychological, a little more in the head.
Yeah.
It's a little more on the character level, whereas Luke Cage has a lot of like a social dynamic. And then with Daredevil, I think you just get really great action and fighting sequences. And so, yeah, okay. That's cool. I thought the first season of Daredevil was something else.
It was
like,
awesome.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Not like anything I'd ever seen on television, no, personally. And maybe I don't watch enough TV.
No, but Private Pyle was amazing in that show.
Oh, my word.
He was so good.
Yeah.
Watched
the second season?
I'm partway through.
Okay, so have you... Wait, never mind.
I'm partway through.
Okay. I don't think we're allowed to talk about it.
No, it's spoilers.
I think we're done. But it...
Because there's nothing to actually talk aboutable anymore because of spoilers, but... You know, it's awesome. So since you're listening to a food podcast, you should definitely watch the Marvel shows on Netflix.
Yeah,
right. They're awesome.
While you eat breakfast sandwiches and donuts. And we're back.
And there it is.
Wow. See, it was much smoother than what I did.
Rico Suave.
So.
What you just heard was water glass versus microphone.
A classic battle. So let's switch over to Mr. Mervine and let's talk about the beer process. And I think we're probably going to switch over to our first tasting soon.
Ooh, should we talk about beer while over a beer?
Yeah, let's pour our first beer sample of today.
From your sample tube.
John's sample tube.
Yeah, we got to switch it up. Oh my God, can you smell that, Radioland? Ooh. So right here we have Chris is first in line. Oh, look at, sorry, I can't multitask.
Pour. Nice.
All right, let's.
Pour for yourself first. That's fine. Okay. I'm not. I ain't gonna be no way about it.
I am.
Well, I hate to tell you, now it's empty.
Can you even
what?
No, I got another one.
No.
Can you even drink?
He's got
this?
More stuff
set.
With your two.
Dental, I don't care.
Dental problems?
I need to drink more.
That's okay.
It's only going to help. Unless you chip your tooth on beer, which I'd be really impressed by.
Don't put it past him.
It might. If I could chip my tooth on a sweet potato. Yeah.
Oh, Radioland. He was not kidding about that smell.
Ooh, that smell. It's a...
Part slower.
Yeah. it's an experience here.
Oh my God.
So I mean you've
headphones are
so
great.
So I actually want to ask a couple of questions. So like, what size system are you guys starting with?
Starting with. Are you implying that we're going to a next system after that?
It's hard to say.
You don't know nowadays.
No,
really
I mean
don't.
It happens so fast. I mean there's so many places that start
Good
out
Lord.
And then they be like, oh my God, we've outgrown this capacity. Mm-hmm. So I kind of wanted to say starting, but you know, who knows?
No, that's fair.
It could be permanent.
You know, I mean, yeah, everything's fluid.
Yeah.
Just like beer and coffee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, so we'll be starting with a 3-vessel, 10-barrel system.
I mean, 10 barrels, pretty big to start
and,
with.
And for, if that doesn't make sense, just for perspective, a barrel of beer is, think of it as, 2 half kegs. So, you know, if assuming you're hitting your numbers and efficiencies and all that, you know, each batch, each time you hit the kettles, you, single batch was going to yield you 20 half kegs.
So, I mean, that's, and a lot of places, I mean, when you look at a lot of the small, you know, the craft breweries that are opening in our area right now, a lot of them are opening with three barrel systems. And most three of them at biggest are 5.
Well, there's a 7 around.
Yeah, 3, 5, 7. Yeah. And it's, they're all very modest starts. I mean, I respect that in the sense that, you know, to feel and test out and, you know, to make sure that you know where, you know, where you want to go, you know, it's a good way. I mean, there's other strategies if you want to go all in and, you know, grab a 50-barrel system and, you know, but I think on those smaller systems, you can have
a lot more fun.
You have more, you're able to pivot more. If you want to be experimental, if you want to, you know, try different things, you're not obligated to, you know, getting rid of 100 barrels of beer, right. You know, that of a run that you're not 100% on.
Yeah, I mean, and a great example that I've gone and tried a couple times that I really enjoy is what Three Huskies is doing in Canandaigua.
Oh, right on.
I think they're running on a 3-barrel, but they have a lot of stuff on at the same time because they're constantly churning. You know, they're working a ton, I'm sure, to keep everything fresh and keep everything on. But they can try new things, and it's not a disaster if it doesn't pop. So, I mean, I love that flexibility they have. But so starting with 10, which is a pretty good amount of volume.
Yeah, I think it accounts for your early stages, and you can certainly you know, burn through and chug through that, you know, through the middle stages, you know, of your you know, your strategy and your growth.
Yeah. So how has it been? It's a new system to you, obviously.
It's a new system to itself.
Yeah.
Yep. And to us.
So how has that been, learning that system?
Oh, well, it hasn't quite touched our hands just yet.
Ah, so what's, so where, again, like I say, where are you in that process?
So in the process, we've isolated, we know our vendor, we know all the parts. It's now it's just a matter of them being manufactured. So that is one of the longest parts of the process where you have many months of leads times, just because there's, you know, the supply of vendors doing, you know, quality tanks and vessels, you know, is less than the demand needed right now. So we're talking, you know, you can talk to some places and you're looking at maybe 4 months, and you can talk to others and they're out a year on their tanks,
which is
and kettles,
which is kind of important.
Very important when you're trying to plan an open.
Yeah.
You don't have a brew system. How are you going to,
it's a little bit challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you're brewing beer and trying to sell it.
So it's, I mean, I think that's what I, you know, communication and understanding that before, you know, putting money down and, you know, telling people when you're going to open and having a hard set date, you got to make sure those ducks are all in a row.
Absolutely. So in the meantime, obviously it's kind of hard to develop full recipes because it acts completely different on a full system versus wherever you're brewing right now, whether it's at home or with somebody else.
Right. It's not a linear
No, and that's
progression by any sense of the imagination.
Why don't you talk about that for a second? Because it's kind of, it is true. That's what a lot of people struggle with right away.
I mean, you know, in terms of scaling up,
yeah.
You know, there's always a little bit of that je ne sais quoi. That's the kettle. That's French for
that is French, by the way. Yeah.
Je ne sais pas.
That's two.
Jacuzze.
Charcuterie.
Boo.
so you always have a little bit of the essence of the system that you're going to, you know, you can't expect for until you actually get some runs going. But in terms, I mean, there's a lot of programs out there nowadays. There's also there's a very strong community of brewers. I mean, we're living in a time that has over 5,000 breweries in just the U.S. alone.
And right.
Other countries along, you know, in the world are blowing up too. So in terms of, you know, back and forth, you know, there's a brotherhood and dialogue to help with that as well.
Well, not only that, there's so many resources just here in Monroe County.
It's called the interwebs too.
Yeah, I mean, you have the whole country, and then you have
YouTube.
You know what? It seems like a pretty good local community at the same time.
Sure is.
And that's when I talk to other local brewers, they comment on it all the time. Right now, is people are helping each other. It's not too combative of a local environment. Maybe not yet. Maybe it will be, but you know, it seems pretty collaborative.
What are you implying, Chris?
I don't know if we're coming in and we're trying to disturb everything. And
do we seem like those guys? No.
Going for attacks.
I feel like he's always has a finger out and he's like poking. And
he's just,
and
it's like, damn.
Going for that hard-hitting journalism, I think.
Yeah, that's what we're doing today.
He wants us to launch the
war
muckraking right here, right now, and we're not going to do it.
Yeah, you got to muckrake all day. Oh, so what are we drinking right now?
So, going back a few minutes in radio time, that smell we were smelling was all the aromatics, which probably guys are already thinking it's an IPA.
Yes, it is.
I guess it would be like a welterweight. It's like a mid-class, 7%. It's a full-on IPA. Lots of different structure to it. Definitely get some mouthy toothiness out of it. It's just to paint a picture for you. it's hazy AF.
It certainly is.
Very milky, gravy-esque. But
John's a teenager.
But that's not so much to be concerned about in terms of the color, but just the smell. A lot of late kettle addition, a lot of late whirlpool additions, just to kind of keep those oils intact. Don't let those degrade down. And definitely some dry hopping is to help emphasize that aroma.
Yeah, I mean, this is... Yeah, go ahead.
So this is my first time tasting the beer, Jared's first time tasting the beer. Can I ask, John, what gives it kind of the dankness on the back? Like, because it definitely gets funkified when you swallow it, and it's making me real happy. What?
Yeah, it's... I mean, those are just straight up boils.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I wouldn't say that they're, you know, rotting your gum lines, but they're definitely coating the palate. Like, it's like... I have to lick it off the back of my teeth like that.
Yeah, so, I've never heard it described that way, but I'm doing the same thing.
You feel what I'm, saying, though? I'm trying to, you know.
So it might break my tooth.
No, actually.
It'll rebuild your tooth.
Yeah, Jared shipped his tooth on the way over here today. So if you keep this up, I think I might have to give you some of mine. Like all of the protein left in here and all those hop oils, they're actually going to create a constructive compound to help fill that gap. And I think you're going to be okay. But I'm not a dentist. I just drink beer.
It's the same thing.
I digress. But I honestly, I think that dankness is obviously the choice of hops used. Definitely, there's a multitude of them. They will change up just depending. I have some experimentals in this guy that I was so happy to procure from one of our farmers we'll be working with. But nothing signed, so I'll share next time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of juice, a lot of fruit, some tropical to it, but man, it's just oil all the way down your throat. It's like if you're a bourbon drinker or a rye drinker, it equivocates to like the burn of a nice like brown liquor.
Yeah, but it's plenty of juiciness. I mean, it's definitely, you know, it definitely reminds of the New England style right now.
Yep.
Versus your Vermont style, which is slightly different. Definitely reminds of that New England style, you know, hazy, juicy, not overly. It doesn't have that over the top bitterness that, you know, people became accustomed to.
Like on the West Coast.
The West Coast style. Mm. Wade's getting pointed at.
I just played glass versus microphone too.
Ah, you know. Oh. We got to call it out every time it happens.
Got to do it.
I didn't last time he did it, but.
You looked. I saw you look.
Sideways glances. But yeah, I mean, this style is very popular right now where you taste the hops, but it's not a striking, assertive bitterness profile.
No, it's welcome. I mean, it smells what it tastes like. It has a little bit of a slight lingering bitterness. Obviously, that's going to happen from the dry hopping additions, hop sediment that's left in there being unfiltered naturally. But I mean, it's almost welcoming. Like it quenches your thirst at the same time. It's like, you know, it's like, I want some more.
Yeah. You know, just a hair of sweetness, but it doesn't taste sweet per se, but it's got that sweet, I don't know what to call it, but that sweet front a little bit.
Not milk, but like it's like sweet cream. I don't know.
Yeah, it's light.
Like a whipped butter.
Jared, how do you feel about that?
I just want to hear John talk more about milk.
Does
tell me more.
Good.
Get a little bit closer.
Yeah.
And talk about milk and that sweet cream.
My favorite is milk that's extracted from nuts. I like almonds. Almond milk is good.
Yeah.
But, like, what?
Oh. All right. So.
We're going to do a non-dairy milk stout, right?
Oh. There's definitely. Maybe. Yeah. I mean,
don't get me started.
That's a great idea.
Just don't tell. Well.
Spoiler alert.
So, I mean, obviously you're working on IPAs. IPAs are hot right now.
Yeah, IPAs are a category that's not going away. They continue to be, you know, developed every year. You're seeing, you know, fruit.
Well, that's, it's the starter beer. You know, like that's...
It's weird.
It's a good beer to get you in to all these other beers.
It's weird that IPAs are now a starter beer instead of what people would consider the basics.
Like
the pilsners and lagers.
Right. Yeah.
You know, really simple beers that can be crisp and refreshing.
Which are still classics.
Right, but now... IPAs have become the baseline, which is, I think, still kind of odd, even though, I mean, it is my favorite style. Because, I mean, as a brewer, I mean, the simple ones can often be the most challenging.
Correct.
Because there's nothing to hide against. It's basic.
And that's where you stand to reason, where it's, you know, simplicity wins out, and, you know, any type of technical flaw. Hops can, I mean, cover up a lot of things. So, but we're not, you know, you're not, when you're drinking IPA, you're not thinking like, oh, what are they trying to hide in there? Like, yo, we're like, oh, I love the combination of tangerine peel with lemon pith and this like passion fruit, you know, guava undertone. Like that's what you're thinking of.
Yeah.
So, you know, you want a lager, you want something that's crisp, that's refreshing, that's just bone dry and, you know, just has that nice continental grain character to it. You know, perhaps some people like the green bottle element of lagers too, but you know, it's a taste and preference, and to each their own.
So what's the other one you're working on most right now? Obviously you've got IPAs, but.
Oh my God. I'm a fatty beer fanatic. Working on a line of some brown beers, some dark beers. We're going to be doing some wood aging over at the Facilitae.
Nice.
So there's nothing like stouts that get into the hand gesturing over here.
I have to tell, like, I want you to tell about, finish what you're saying,
okay.
But I want to say something when you're done.
Okay.
And I thought Jared was going to jump in, and I just want to make sure we don't step on your
point. I wasn't there
for it,
so I can't.
Because I'm, like, I love talking about this stuff, but there is a wonderful story at the end of this.
Yeah.
When John says wood aging, I'm just like, you got to hear about John's
ideas. Well, we've got a cue. So John's going to talk, then Wade's going to talk, and then Jared's going to, you know, do whatever he does.
Talk about his tooth.
Pantomiming.
All right, so Jared, not Jared, John.
Yes.
John, why don't you finish your conversation?
So right now we're working on, you know, a Russian Imperial and also something that's a little bit lighter in terms of like a, you know, a 6-7%er. You know, something like, you know, the winter, that sweater weather stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I like how that's light now. Like 7%. It's like, I'd say it was only 7.
Yeah, it's...
You know, like...
The transition's
I'm going to get
jarring.
A, you know, like medium 11%. Right?
Yeah.
and honestly...
It's just funny, you know, like think about when we, you know, like when we started drinking beer, I was like, dude, that's a 9%. You're going to get hammered. And it's just like, no, I'll have 7.
No, you know? But now that we're older and know better, you just drink them in smaller vessels.
It's true.
Yeah, really. Invite Hopefully. Some friends.
Yeah.
That's true. Make some friends.
Right. Except for the 20-ounce can ideas.
Yeah.
Which, oh, my God.
Are genius.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, no.
Yeah.
Yes. Where are we? Engaging the room.
So I'd say that, I mean, with the idea of, you know, being a little bit more pure and with the stout realm, we have some other ideas. And I think that those are good ways to showcase what we're doing with our coffee program, too.
For sure. I mean, they're the natural fit.
Natural. Not to say that we're going to be unnatural and definitely do some other things, but out of the gate, that's definitely on the plan. Since we're in warm weather, as soon as we have tank space, we'll be putting the big guys in some barrels, and then we can bring those out once ski season happens next year.
Nice. So Wade has a story.
So let me just clarify, how much can I talk about the production space? We good? Oh.
There's a lot of space.
Can I talk about it?
Tease me.
12,000 square feet.
Wow.
And like, I'm not just bringing it
there.
Up to to brag about it or something, but there's a lot of space.
It's a huge amount of space.
We're walking through it the other day, getting an idea for layout, and everywhere we go, in my head, I'm like, what would I put there? What would I put there? What would I? And I just happened to voice this a couple times. I go to John, well, what could we put here? And he, barrels.
Barrels.
I'm like, okay, so now we're walking again. What would we put here? Barrels? And
definitely got to be barrels.
Every time I ask. So it became kind of funny to me. I started asking, like, oh, what are you going to put there? Barrels. It's just like, so basically we're going to be fifth frame barrel room. Like when he says wood aging, it's like anything barrels. We can put on wood and that we think will be interesting out of wine barrels, bourbon barrels, whatever barrel we can get our hands on.
Well, there's so many opportunities. I mean,
there's a lot of barrels out in this world that haven't been touched for with fermented products.
If you didn't know, few. John loves barrels.
I love barrels.
I mean, there are so
I
few.
I love barrels.
I mean, love barrels too. Yeah.
Okay, green homework assignment. Go find a barrel and hug it. Barrels need love. You love that barrel, it'll give you good stuff.
Keep saying barrel, please.
Barrel.
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 Can I just quick plug? Joe Bean did a gin barrel aged coffee. It's their Don Roger Natural.
It's really fascinating.
And I brewed it every possible way I could think of, just wondering if any of them wasn't going to be absolutely amazing. And they were all absolutely amazing. The team absolutely crushed it over there. So, you know,
that gives
me a lot of hope for green, you know, green coffee and barrel aging potential and all that.
Well, so and how clearly it came out, too, where it didn't overwhelm the coffee, but it was a clear, crisp note when it was brewed. It wasn't obfuscated. I thought it was a lot clearer than the whiskey was last year. I thought the gin really popped through.
It was a
really
lot more
nice.
Subtle, and you could see where there was interaction between the product that had been in the barrel and the product that they then put in it. And I thought it was a home run, and I commend the team 100% on that. I loved it.
A challenging thing for sure, especially to get the balance right, and it really worked out.
Yeah.
It was great.
My understanding was this was just a kiss through the barrel. Like it was pretty touch and go. I mean, I think when they did the Zimbabwe, I was still there.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit more time. And I think with bourbon, you know, you give it a little more and you get a little more. Whereas with the gin, like you never know what's going to interact with that natural process. Like there's too many factors, you know?
Yeah.
So great job. It was just terrific. Yeah. And so I'm going to use as many of those barrels as he's not using, which probably have to find some of my own.
Or we're going to use them after he uses them.
Yeah.
That too. Or before he uses them.
Well, which makes sense. I mean, because then you're getting different profiles in there as well, because green coffee has its own very specific aroma. And
definitely. We're just going to screw everybody's head up pretty much.
Then we barrel aged it in this, but it was barrel aged after that.
I think
but then we put some of this in there.
Talked about this before.
Remember.
It's like, we're going to take this thing and put it in there, and then we're going to take that, and we're going to put it over here, and we're going to put this thing over here, and then we're going to throw it in your face, and we're going to put it back in there, and then you're going to drink it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
And we're going to shove donuts in it.
And then we're going to shove donuts in it, and then in your face. And then those donuts back in there, and then we're going to put those back in your face. A lot of back and forth.
Oh, yes.
Donut.
Yeah. I'll have to listen to the replay just to follow that through.
I think it really
works. It's all in the group text somewhere.
That's true.
So, well, let's pivot to coffee. So
can we pivot to coffee in just a minute? I need to go get.
Oh yeah. So actually, let's take a quick break.
Okay.
For this word from whatever sponsor I have this week, and we'll be back. I'd like to take a second to tell you about a new Rochester-based website called Frankly. That's PHRANK.ly. Frankly is a one-stop shop to find out where your favorite restaurants source their ingredients. And also a great way to see who carries that coffee you love, or who uses the best bread for their sandwiches. Frankly is the perfect tool to find the information you need about the food and drink you love. That's PHRANK.ly. And now that Jared has gone pee, how was it, Jared?
I don't think that plant was very happy.
No. Well, maybe it will be now. Thanks.
Sorry. I couldn't find the stairs.
They're complicated.
I got lost.
So we're back, and we've got something different in front of us. So, Wade, let's talk. What do we have in front of us?
Right here we have a small batch, 4-hour cold brew process of a coffee from Burundi.
That's really good.
So I'm personally a little bit convicted about is that cold brew requires some type of flow of water through the bed.
Okay.
And so I'm staunchly against toddy, personally.
I'm actually very much in agreement with you. Yeah. It's something where that's how I, one of the ways I got into coffee originally was, you know, the big long cold brew because it's so generic. It's really soft. It's, you get chocolate, a little bit of weird sourness.
It's inoffensive.
Yeah, super inoffensive. That's how I started.
Was
that cold brew. But the reason I don't drink it anymore is because it's very generic and inoffensive, and you don't get a lot of the interesting notes that make coffee exciting.
It's not a way, the way it's usually done now. Caveat, there's a lot of that I like.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not a way I think to draw out a lot of subtlety and potential imbalance that makes that particular coffee interesting, but it is a great way to get a baseline product that a lot of people are going to like.
Absolutely.
Nothing wrong with that because we like to give people things they like.
Yeah, and I like you said, I don't hold it against people for making that or selling it or people enjoying it.
Yeah. I enjoy it for sure.
Yeah, but is it optimal is a whole nother story.
Yeah, I'm of the thought process, if we have this product that has all this potential, let's do some weird things with it until we can get after it a little bit. So this is a whole new experiment for me where I took this one actually ended up being completely different because I just had this thought kind of at the last minute and I thought, well, I might as well give it a try. I took a Yama Silverton, and this is an apparatus that you can control the flow rate on. It has a knob just like the Yama Kyoto Tower. And so basically what I did with it was filled it. It has a metal cone, filled it with coffee, and then put the cold water and ice right in there. Now, this sounds a lot like a toddy, where it's all sitting together all at once. However, the X factor with this is it drips out. So there is a subtle movement of liquid through the bed of coffee.
So, and let's explain the toddy method real quick. So yeah,
that's just where coffee and water sit together.
It's
usually
it's a
in like a bag. Bucket. Yeah, yeah. A bucket
it's
with
like
a bag.
A sparging bag of coffee.
Exactly.
A bucket.
Yeah.
It's easy.
And all it does is they sit together for a long ass time, and then at the end you pull the bag, you know, and you wait for it to drain, and then you compost it, and then like there's your coffee. It's there and it's been sitting there, and that's all it's been doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think a little bit of flow of water, just a little, vis-a-vis the Kyoto Tower, for instance, is one way to do it.
And these are like the big impressive, you know, 3-4 foot tall things you'll see at coffee shops where it's dripping water down through and it makes this big concentrate overnight.
Yeah. That's one way. The thing I like about the Silverton is it is from the first moment, the exact amount of coffee you want with the exact amount of water you want sitting together, but it adds the component of flow. So it's somewhere in between the two because the Kyoto slow drips. And so at no point do you have all the coffee and all the water together. At some point you have the coffee bed saturated by enough water to let the brew through, and you know push to shove, I'll take Kyoto personally over toddy personally, which I like, but since I wanted to get something with the mass appeal of like a toddy but with a little more of the character like a Kyoto, what I'm trying to do is somewhere in the middle. What makes this unique, this one specifically, is I drip this through in about an hour and 15 minutes, then I took what I had, which was obviously very weak cold coffee. The ice hadn't even melted yet, and I reintroduced it to the same bed of grounds and let it drip through in about 2 hours. And then looking at it, smelling it, tasting it a little bit, I thought, let's give it one more try. So I went through a third time in about 45 minutes.
Interesting.
And so what I found was, I think aroma-wise, I definitely lost something. Aroma-wise, it's good, chocolatey, caramely. You get a lot of those sugar browning notes. There's maybe a little bit of a gingerbread something in there. I like it, but it's not quite where I want it. Flavor-wise, this is cold brew with acidity. This is cold brew with character. This is cold brew with even a little floral touch on the very finish. This is some spiciness. This to me is like the cold brew that actually speaks to you about what the coffee tastes like, not what the process tastes like. And so for me, like, I like this, and I'm going to find, so the next step for me is finding a way to do this using some brewing equipment on a larger scale.
Yeah.
This kind of recirculating some of that water and moving it through slow, but not as slow as like some other methods. And so
it'd be interesting. It sounds like an engineering experiment.
Well, we're thinking about it. We're going to try to see what we can buy and then chop up and fabricate. So
yeah.
Because why not?
No, and I love the idea. I mean, it's something a little bit different because it's, I mean, the profile, you know, it's not opaque. It's not super dark. It looks like, you know, a lighter roast brewed coffee, which it actually looks like coffee, which, you know, the others really don't. I mean, modern coffee, I guess, is what I'd call it.
Sure.
It looks like, you know, it looks like coffee. And I do like that, you know, the acidity it has.
Right.
It's not super present, though, so if you want the lower acidity, it still has that.
Definitely, definitely. And I was getting some feedback on similar process that I did, and, you know, it's people were picking up, you know, things like cherry as far as grilled pineapple and things like that, and that's super exciting to me. I've never had that kind of thing in a cold brew, and I've had really great cold brew. I make a yearly trip to Tucson, Arizona, where cold brew is a way of life, you know, so they have coffee companies down there have to do it well.
And by the way, that incredibly well. That grilled pineapple note is actually kind of striking, and how that really hit me right away as soon as you said it. I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting, because that's the one that speaks to me most now that you've mentioned it.
Yeah, I would say it's a little bit of like you have to sit with it for a minute. You got to roll it on your tongue a little bit, but there's something sweet, tropical with like a very clear acidity, very clear. I mean, for me, if you were to ask me what's my philosophy of coffee, I would just say I want clean, sweet coffees. That's what I love to drink. That's what I want to make. And when I taste something like this, I'm like, it's clean, it's sweet. It's not overly simple. It is simple, but it's not overly simple. There is still like, okay, yeah, I can get maybe not so much the cherry in this batch, but the grilled pineapple, like, that gets me really excited, because there are so many times where I'm like, this coffee's good, but it's kind of outside that clean, sweet parameter where I like it, you know, and there are all kinds of like what's great about coffee is the same thing as what's great about beer, as there are all kinds of ways to do it and all kinds of flavors and people's tastes that you can meet. But at the end of the day, if I want to put out a product I love, it's going to be like this. It's going to be weird. It's going to be geeky. It's going to be something other people would probably look at and go, you did what and why now? And I would go, well, I did this, and I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure. I have some ideas, but it worked. And I want it to speak for itself more so than speak for the process.
Well, I find that really interesting, because it allows something different. It allows something creative to come out of it instead of, I mean, all the ratios are kind of set in a lot of other ways.
Right.
You know, everything's kind of set. I mean, there's optimal ways of doing things. And when you try and tweak it and try and do something different, well, I mean, it allows for a lot of failures, but sure, could be some spectacular wins too.
Exactly. And I think parameters are great, but you can only play with them so far. Yeah. Like you said, we have a pretty good handle on what makes for the best.
Right.
So it's fun to take something that you wouldn't normally do and, you know, find out about it. So, but I should also say, which I skipped over, and I want to go back real quick and just, big thanks to Fuego Coffee Roasters, Tony and Renee and their crew. They let me use their roaster, and that was what this was roasted on.
So I was going to say,
actually, our Burundi roasted on their roaster.
Nice.
They have been incredibly gracious with me, helping, letting us use their machine, use their time, use their fuel, all of it.
So. Yeah, I was going to say, so like, you've been roasting mostly there? I mean, bouncing around a little bit, or?
So our sample roaster currently lives at Glen Edith Coffee Roasters.
Okay.
They were in the market for one. We had one, and we thought, you know, you can try this out, see if it works for your needs, and, you know, let us know what works for you. It's pretty collaborative, and then if I needed to use it, it's there, and I can use it. And that was good, but since we're doing some beer experiments now, and I wanted to be able to have a little more product on hand than just what I was able to give out, I was talking to Tony, and we were actually talking a lot about his competition, which just happened about a week and a half ago.
Don't spoil it yet. I haven't watched it.
Which we'll get
bad.
To. Okay.
Then no, but it's okay. No, we should get into it. But I love that stuff.
And in the course of that, it came about that, I did some test roasts of his coffee just to see, you know, if I could give them kind of a different perspective on that coffee than they were, what they were roasting it at. And in the course of that, I used their roaster and got some time on their roaster for our coffees too, which was terrific. And so I have a volume of it and I can play a little more.
Well, it's nice. I mean, this is the time for that. And it's
not half a handful at a time. You know. It was watching like any Salt coffee Bay. Giveaway yeah, or exactly. anything that we did up until you know, like you started roasting at Fuego a couple weeks ago, you know, was roasted what, like 100 grams at a time?
200. Yeah.
200 grams.
200 yeah. whole grams.
Oh, whopping 200 grams at a time.
Not even, you know, like hours and hours and hours and hours, yeah. hours
to do, you know, like 6 4-ounce bags of coffee.
Yeah.
You know, like
mostly
it was
in
a
my
lot
kitchen.
Of work.
Yeah.
Not in Wade's kitchen.
Mostly not in my kitchen.
Mostly not in the kitchen. So thank you, Glen Edith, for getting Wade out of his kitchen.
So I mean, that's got to, you're right. That's got to be nice to yeah. you know, build up the volume a little bit and, you know, work, be able to work a little more collaboratively.
Dare I say, pump up the volume?
Dance.
I was serious for like a whole 2 or 3 minutes say, there,
John,
guys. Come on,
John is giving us real hard looks right now.
That was good.
I'm sorry, John. Oh, I thought you were gonna hit like a. I keep thinking that has like sound effects on it.
I'm riding
like a
I'm riding all the levels.
Oh man!
Everybody's like, and everything's really nice, and then. So obviously you've been bouncing between your sample roast and now you're moving up on volume. And I love the cold brew experiments. That's kind of interesting. Kind of gives you a chance now to mess around with it a little more.
Definitely.
Is there anything else? I mean, obviously you're looking at your equipment as well, your roaster, everything else. How's that process been going?
It's manufactured. It's on its way.
Nice.
It's according to the form.
On a boat.
According to the form I just saw, it's ETA is end of next month. So
that's awesome.
And at that point, hopefully, we'll have some space in the 12,000 square feet. It won't already be taken up by barrels.
I don't think the doper's going to fit.
Sorry, Wade. We don't have room for your roaster anymore. It's all barrels.
We're rusting it on barrels.
Excuse me, Joper. Can you modify this to sit on barrels?
Basically.
Double barrel it back all the way.
And hold barrels so we can put barrels on top of it.
Double barrel Joper roaster barrel room barreled.
Barrels. Joper.
So it's, our 15 kilo Joper, which I chose because I'm a geek. And they have an amazing profiling system that comes with their production roasters that tracks things that I don't even know understand. The impact of yet.
Wow.
So wow. For me, it's like I'll get a chance to explore even more about roasting, which is really exciting to me. And so, that's on its way. Since we're talking about roasting, I'm going to plug February 19th. February 19th at Joe Bean. Rory Van Grohl and Ben Turiano are putting on a little roaster side chat where just local and regional roasters get together and talk about the process. So check it out on Facebook. Rochester Coffee Society has an event on Facebook, Roaster Side Chat, February 19th at Joe Bean.
I'm excited, actually. I'm really excited because it's an interesting group of people talking about it. And I love when people get together and nerd out about whatever anything. They're passionate about. It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
If people it really doesn't. Care about it, and they want to talk about it, I usually find some interest in it, even if it's not my
right.
not my particular passion. And right. it does make it easier when it intersects. But even when it doesn't, I can find the interest in it because they have interest in it.
Right.
I, like, example, I got my haircut today, and the stylist had all these, like, gems and crystals and stuff on, like, right in front of me, in front of the mirror, like, between
you
me
and
the
You didn't
go mirror.
To Amanda?
They're closed on Mondays, and it's really the only day I have. So I tried. And so
sorry, Amanda Mack.
So basically in the course of just getting my haircut, I asked about these different crystals and stuff.
Yeah.
And she really was interested and had a lot of stories, and like I have no background and no necessarily like hobby there at all, but just hearing what she was saying about it and prompted questions. And my questions were thoroughly answered. And it's just
interesting.
It's exactly how it is. Like you said, like if someone has enough passion and they really believe what they're saying, there's something different about it. That's like where conversation comes from. And that's like how ideas are born and how like I think I've always broadened my horizons personally. And that's how I got into beer. This guy to my right, actually geeking out with him in the past, you know, first at Rock and then on his couch, like it just,
I mean, that's
where it comes
us,
from.
Yeah.
That's why I love beer. You know, it's like I can trace that to conversation. Yeah. So,
well, John, I think you need to remove some barrels now and make a crystal corner because I think it's going to make a big difference
yes!
in your production.
Well, I think we just have an idea for a skylight. We'll do a skylight in
all
made out of
crystals.
We're going to have crystals
from the Herkimer mine. She told
so
me a lot about
we're
going to
make barrels out
Herkimer
of crystals.
Diamonds.
Yeah.
Do you think
yeah.
we'd need a certain method to the crystal formulation or
yeah.
formation?
Well, I want the crystals.
Boo.
How did we get here?
Well, it just
what are we doing?
Passion.
How did
it
we
is
get
a
here?
We have passion, Jared. What do you want to do with your life?
Man, what are you passionate about?
It became my passions.
Oh, so Jared's
that was,
falling
that was
apart.
Way back.
Jared's getting
was,
existential, it looks like.
Was,
how did we
no,
get here?
That was like 6 years ago.
Dude.
Oh.
Yeah.
The time before children.
Oh, my God.
It's that a great is, time,
wait,
by
wait,
the way.
Wait,
wait, wait. Wow.
Yes.
That was a
that
lot
was
harder.
I'm sorry if I took up like a ton of time talking
no.
about coffee. It's just like.
No, but that's.
It's a good time for me because I'm getting to try things and do a lot of stuff.
But that's the exciting time yeah. is now it's, you know, this is when it starts to get interesting. When you get your own roaster, when you start doing your volume, when you start doing your experiments.
And so it's also like I'm a little more flexible with my days. I work nights right now in the interim. And it's really incredible to be able to walk, to have days where I can walk into Fuego, Glen Edith, Joe Bean, Ugly Duck, and just bring them stuff. And like I'll cup with Rory, I'll cup with Janine, I cupped a bunch with Tony, these coffees that we were roasting for his competition. Like the opportunity in this community to just like connect.
Yeah.
Which I think other groups maybe don't have as much time to do because they're in the middle of their kind of their operation, whereas ours is we're still, you know, in that beginning phase. And so it's really highlighted for me just what an incredible community we have and like how much I want to carry that kind of spirit of collaboration into what I do with Fifth Frame. If, you know, if like I feel like I just called everyone out, but that's not what I meant to do. Like, you know, I know it gets busy,
yeah.
but I've found so much value in the feedback. I found so much value in the interaction, the mutual passion. I think, and you know, with what Rory's doing with Rochester Coffee Society, I really look forward to the potential there too. So
yeah, I'm really excited he's getting back into that a little bit more. I think I remember going to one of the first ones right when I was getting into this whole food and drink thing when I didn't know anybody yet. And I remember it being really awkward because I didn't know anybody. I was just standing on the side.
Because you were the weird guy that only talked about curling?
Yeah, I mean, I still do that, but thanks, Jared.
Well, now we're all used to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, now I mean, it's okay.
No, that's what I mean, we are drinking out of Rochester curling glasses.
Of course we are. Apparently. Yeah, league champion all day.
Why wouldn't we?
But yeah, it's... And I think that's the other thing is it's real constructive information and honest feedback. Because feedback, just for feedback's sake, doesn't help anybody. But real, honest feedback, I mean, you know you're going to get honest feedback when you talk to these people.
Absolutely. And it's been a huge help for me. But it's also like I get the chance to give that honest feedback.
Yeah.
Which is a good outlet for me. Don't even.
I mean, it's something you struggle with is giving honest feedback, I'm sure.
I have like... It was, I think, having the opportunity to be a part of Tony going into competition was huge because it was, you sort of have to put people through the ringer when they're going to competition.
Yeah.
So
no, you can't be nice at all.
You can't be too nice. You do have to be encouraging when you're coaching.
Yeah. But you can't, you know, like.
It's not Bobby
I'm not
Knight
saying
style.
That this is what we do.
Right.
I'm not saying this is what we do, but, you know, like. You can't just be like, oh, no, no, that shot was great. It was, you know, like, it was great. Yeah.
And then there's, like, the Wade and Jared rules.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
oh,
completely different. Where it's, like, any small technical flaw, and it could be a full just dressing down of expletives.
It just goes, but it, no, it just goes straight judge style.
We do. You know? We're both, so we're both, you know, like, former race
that
competition
was a little, that tamp was a little thumb heavy.
I don't know.
It's kind of F plus on that one, buddy. You know, like I say that at work now to the kids at Glen Edith, and nobody understands. I was like, ah, it's F plus.
You say how?
They're
how
like, what? And I was like, I don't know. I'll go back to my old folks' home.
I was gonna say how is it being? How is it being an old person?
It's exciting. It's fun to watch that. Yeah. You know, it brings me back to like when Wade and I started at Joe Bean. You know, like everything was still new to us. And this
I don't think
that.
They hate you that much.
I shouldn't say you and I because. We're not gonna go there. No, it's fun. It's funny watching all that. You know, like how where it's going now to where it's started.
Yeah,
I guess.
I mean,
and
because like some, I'm sure some of them have like optimism and hopes and dreams for the future.
Don't we all?
I don't know. I kind of look at your eyes, I'm not sure there's any left.
No, it's just dead.
They're dead.
It's just all dead.
He's got dead eyes.
You're just seeing like a lot of tooth pain.
By the way, I watched.
Oh my god! I was just gonna say. I think I just watched Jaws. Like
I watched all four of them.
Oh my god! Why
Jaws?
Oh, they're so this.
It gets so
four,
bad.
It's gets so bad.
Did you know that the Jaws was rated PG?
As well, it should be. It's a movie for everybody.
That's
family friendly from start to finish. The kids identify with poor Chrissy.
That's horrible.
But yes, 3 and 4 are some of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Oh, it's so bad.
They're really bad. But I mean, it's gotta be, it has to be interesting now as you're kind of the elder statesman there.
I mean, I'm not the oldest, but you know, I don't know.
He said elder, not eldest.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I hate being that person though.
Crotchety old man?
No. You know, like, I've been doing this shit for 7 years.
Back in my day.
You know, like, I don't know. I don't like that. You know, I mean, it's whatever, but, you know, like, I like this, seeing it like this, because before, you know, like, when I was, you know, like, back at Java's, you know, like, I'm seeing these guys do that, you know, like, I remember going to the Joe Bean for the first time. Like having my first shot there, I was like, this is garbage. What is this supposed to taste like? This doesn't taste like dirt. You know, it's just like very confusing, you know? And now, you know, it's like.
I think your exact quote was, it tastes like lemon juice.
It is. How do you remember that?
Because I was pissed, man.
Not that he remembers or holds it against him or anything.
That was like 6 years ago.
It's fine. It's fine.
It's fine that you were wrong.
I have been to your wedding. I have since, you know, babysat your child.
That's true.
Like,
and he obviously
it's
forgot
all good.
About it. He forgot about it.
It's all it's the best
me?
Damn lemon juice I've ever tasted. So.
I remember my first specialty shot somewhere too. I'm like,
God, I thought it was awful.
I can't drink it. And
but
it's weird how
fast
it changes.
I thought it was the dumbest thing.
I was instantly in love. The
But you didn't come from that second wave, did you?
I mean, I was pretty into Starbucks at the time that I got into. Is that different? No, you're gonna
so.
Okay.
No,
I mean, I wasn't working in coffee when I got into specialty coffee.
What was your first one? Where was it? Was it here? Was it elsewhere?
Intelligentsia.
In Chicago?
In Chicago. So, like, when we first moved there.
It's such I
lived there for 3 years, and so I went to the one on Broadway.
That
was my first, like, wait a minute. wait a minute. What is this?
And the shop style is so specific, too. Yeah. That intelligentsia shop style is so spare and interesting.
Mine was seeing, I was, at the time, roasting at Java's. And Joe pulled up on his computer his son, who worked for Kubrick's Coffee, I think at the time, in New Jersey or New York, was competing in the barista competition. And this was in 2008, maybe. And, you know, he's like, oh, you know, like Joe's doing the coffee competition. And I looked at it, I was like, why? This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, it's a competition for coffee. He's like, yeah, it's kind of stupid, whatever. You know, and like, I'm sitting in a room full of old Italian men, and we're just eating deli meat and mustard and things like that. You know, so it was just like, you know, we all kind of like watched it for a minute. You know, like Joe, I think, was watching it, but you were like, that's stupid. And then I became a judge at those. It's funny, but that was my first look of, you know, like specialty coffee was the
watching a competition,
the barista competition. Yeah, it was weird. It was funny. So I never knew that that's where I'd end up.
Yeah,
I guess.
So
it's a little bit like seeing someone get thrown in the deep end.
Yeah.
Like, why would you ever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you said you were getting involved with Tony and you were helping him work on his competition.
Yeah.
How was, you know, I've talked to him.
He came in first place. I'm kidding.
Wow.
I was trying to get you up here. See, now you're up here. Now you're really pumped. You're really pumped up right now, aren't you?
Well, I was going to give background and then you just kind of jabbed right in there with that. No, sharp left jab.
Story of our lives.
But yeah, I mean, Tony's somebody I've talked to about competition a lot. He's really into it.
He loves it so
really
much.
He's
watching him like, compete is
so
intense.
Seeing his passion
awesome.
Come out in his discipline and his training this year, I was just like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to do this anymore because like I can't match your energy.
No, but watch it. You know, like Wade and I have watched a lot of people compete and a lot of, you know, like everybody has, I don't know. Tony is just different. Tony's not, you know, like reading a script or doing this. Tony's just being Tony.
He's being Tony.
You know, he's, it's
like
no different
11,
than him doing
though.
His practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It feels,
you know,
very
it's
much
really
like
awesome to watch.
What you get when you walk into Fuego, which is an awesome experience.
It's not a show.
And it's just him. And so I was super excited. He asked me to, you know, just play with the coffee that he was using. It was excellent. Really excellent. Like, I kept a good portion of it. Kenyan coffee that he could tell you all about. So I got to do that. And then I did some run-throughs with him. I tested his signature beverage with him. And I was just really honored to share in that. You know, the competitions are tough. The competitions are tough. I think Rochester hasn't quite cracked what it is that those judges are looking for.
We have to move to New York City.
That would be one theory.
Or be Jordan Barber.
I know that I don't want to speak for Tony, but I know that this year it sounds a little bit like his judges weren't entirely calibrated, which,
is not new.
I mean, to us, we've heard of that before, but it's also really offensive because when we were judges, you know, we worked our asses off to learn this stuff. To be good judges, to be calibrated with our peers, and to give everyone a fair shot.
Yeah, why don't you explain what that means? Because, I mean, I think I get what you're saying, but why don't you, what is being calibrated as a judge?
I'll give you a few of the highlights. Like, this is us driving to New York City and quizzing each other over the rules. Because the first thing you do when you get there is take a written test. You have to know the rules.
And if you don't pass, then
And passing is like missing three questions or something. Like, it's really, really tough. And then after you take the test, then they give you like their interpretations of the rules. You have to like know the letter of the law. Then they give you the spirit of the law. And then they put you through hours of calibration. And that's you taste something with a group of four people, five people, six people, whatever. And your head judge says, you're right, you're wrong. You need to move closer to one another. You need to change your scores. So
yeah,
like,
there's no like, okay, come here, and, you know, like this and this wasn't right, you know, over here. It's just like, no, you and you and you, you're terrible. Come over here. You guys are fine. You go over that, you know.
And your head judges, they're traveling the country doing this.
Yeah.
You are not going to waste their time. That's not going to happen. So they put you through it, and then you do like some mock run-throughs as like an actual judging panel, and you have to be calibrated that way too. And then you wake up the next morning at like 8, 9 o'clock. Well, actually, you have to be there at like 8 or 9 o'clock. Yeah. And you have to do it all again. Make sure you're calibrated for the day. And that's the whole mass of judges standing around an espresso machine sharing shots and like, okay, you were off. You were off. You didn't taste this? How did you not taste this? Like,
wow.
It's intense. And so the thought to me, and we've seen it before with other competitors, of judges not being calibrated kind of drives me up the wall because I don't get it. And I don't get why head judges don't step in a little more. I've never been a head judge. So that's something, you know, that's for them to defend why they don't do it more. But I feel like it's happened to a few competitors from Rochester, and so that's where you start to wonder about the geography of the matter. And I don't want to piss and moan about that, but it's like we've got good coffee, we've got professionals, and they're going and they're bringing it. And you watch, you know, Tony or Adam last year or some of Ben's competitions in the past, and you're like, these guys should get through.
Yeah.
There's no doubt in my mind. But then there's always something, you know, whether it's one judge or two judges or, you know, never mind. We won't go there. I'm going to blow up. So competitions, it's an interesting thing. And I think like we're going to crack the code here in Rochester. No doubt about it. We're going to be recognized at competition sooner or later. It's just who does it.
Well, yeah, I think the reason why, I mean, you've got this core group of people that that either love or just so intensely passionate about the competition side. And I think that group is growing. And as you get, you know, that critical mass of local people, I mean, you're just the odds just by pure amount of people who are going to do these things on a regular basis, all working together, all trying to get better together. I think that's only going
to
help.
And we need more people to volunteer and judge too, which is a big ask of the companies. Definitely. Yeah. I'm starting to understand that.
Well, now, I mean, these competitions were, I mean, not close, but as you know, like they were in New York City. So that's not, you know, like that's an easy drive. Now they're moving more and more south. You know, they're in.
What was the last one? St. Louis or something?
So that was last year. This year, the first one was in Knoxville.
It's still a long drive.
And then the next one's in Austin.
Or an expensive flight.
Oh, come on.
Yeah,
which is just, you know, like.
But it's also a really, like, okay, 60,000 foot view. It's a great strategy from SEA and BGA to, like, target areas where specialty coffee is new and could gain a lot of following by doing something kind of out there and unique and giving people
kinda like coming here.
Larger exposure. Wow.
Yeah.
I just got jujitsued.
See what happened.
I feel the weight of my own argument.
I couldn't hold it anymore.
Has just thrust me to the ground.
You know, I don't know.
Professional wrestler Jared Foster.
Well, Greco Roman.
I think, you know, opportunities. There are opportunities. I think there are a lot of spaces in Rochester that could host a regional AeroPress easily. And like you've got some players who use AeroPress here, so
SCA.
SCA.
Just SCA.
Specialty Coffee Association, because they merged the Specialty Coffee Association of America and Specialty Coffee Association of Europe merged into the Specialty Coffee Association.
One world government of coffee.
Great.
Yeah.
I mean, we're gonna need to cooperate as much as we can. So
absolutely.
And we'll go.
And
John,
and there starts and finishes our politics portion of the podcast. So, what were we sampling here, Mr. Mervine?
Oh, that was the coffee. That was the coffee. No, we just through that through that conversation, we actually some of us started, some of us didn't start, and others finished the Congress Street from Trillium.
Yeah, which is a great base beer. I mean, so much brightness.
Oh, just like unripened pineapple, mango, apricots, you know, a little bit of acidity, like a little twang on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, just solid. So,
you know, even though I've tried a bunch of their stuff, it's one of my favorites. I think it's the best of their base ones. I find it immensely drinkable and something you want to go back to.
Scaled up, I could drink my weight in.
I just had one yesterday.
Oh my god.
And it was still good. It held up more than you'd think it would after X amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just looking at the data on this. You know, most people don't drink IPAs after 10 days any longer, but this one's late September, so I mean considering 3 months.
Yeah.
Stored in a fridge, very very fresh.
Yeah.
Ouch. Well, so you get okay. So, this is actually a great example. So, we're pouring out of a 16 ounce can here, and Jared's was the second pour, so he definitely got the first. You got the 4 ounces, 4 through 8, the middle of the can, and Wade got the bottom of the can, and there is a distinctive.
That was my nickname in college. Bottom of the can.
Bottom of the can.
Really Wade's got the sandbar.
Mine was bottom of the barrel. How funny!
I thought yours was potato salad. Oh no, that's just us.
That was side dish.
All right.
But the color difference, just looking at the first half of the can from the bottom or from the last half, you know, we're talking in terms of beer speed, the SRM's probably 5. I mean, you went from, you know, goldenrod, straw, you know, hazy pilsner color to a clear, you know, orangey, like Vienna lager look, obviously with a lot of haze, but tons of sediment in the bottom of that glass. Mm-hmm. It's good for you. It's fiber. It's all your vitamins.
It's all fiber. There's a second break for all the fiber, right?
Of course.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
That plant is going to hate us.
All right.
I got to make up for what you did.
Fiber break. All
right. So we're going to take a quick break and then finish up because we've already gone an hour 12. So.
Whew, damn.
All right. Quick break and then we'll finish up. No, all right. Sorry. So while in the start? Break, I poured what is, I mean, still a very delicious beer, but... a beer that's a little bit older. I'd say it's probably from, you know, maybe August really? Or September. It's been sitting in my fridge. And I don't think it matters that we mention where it came from because this happens to all beer. It's a fantastic Trillium beer. We're drinking one of their blonde barley wine coffee beers, which one still tastes fantastic.
They don't date their bottles?
I'm not sure. But, and what we're seeing in it is what looks like, you know, floating white particles that are suspended inside the beer. And I think John wants to talk about that for a little bit.
I mean, for all those people who were big into like novelty pop or soda or beverages back in the 90s, remember Orbitz?
Oh, yeah.
That sugary beverage with like little gelatin tapioca floaties?
Absolutely.
I mean, we're looking at this just on a much smaller scale. There's a lot of hop debris that does that, but I mean, we're talking it's.
But it just stays.
Partial hop break, partial cold break. You know, being that it, you know, we're under the assumption. I don't know if they have a centrifuge at all, but right. You know, under the assumption that it's unfiltered, and there's findings that you'll use as well that'll help, you know, coagulate these proteins and remaining substances that are in solution yet, and chunk
crazy.
Them up. You know, it's like to the.
But it looks it looks like Jell-O. Like if you just sit still, it doesn't move, it doesn't sink.
Yeah,
no, they are it just totally. Stays. It's like fake fish that are in like a jelly solution.
Yeah, because it's something so that I saw. You know, as I remember, I bought an IPA from a place where it was old and they were still selling it.
It's a lot of yeast particulate.
Yeah, because it's weird because it looks weird, but you don't really taste it. You don't taste it in the texture.
I mean, you know. I think something relatable is like, you know, Hetty Topper explicitly says, you know, drink from the can. And there's a reason, because when you dump it out, you know, we're traditionally trained not to drink from the can. Like, you know, open up the aromas, let's stick our face in there and get the muzzle all loaded. But, you know, you kind of want to sometimes because there are some massive chunks that are in those cans that you just don't know of. And then you kind of lose an ounce or two at the bottom because it's just total chunkalicious.
Yeah, so we were just commenting because it was just so apparent when we poured it.
Everyone has it.
Yeah, it's usually like the bottom of the bottle kind of a thing. But this is, every glass.
And we haven't even poured the bottom of the.
It was
out of a 750 Belgian style.
There's still 25% in there.
Yeah, because it's not sediment. It's a whole other thing than sediment.
That's part of it.
Yeah, which is, it's kind of interesting.
So we're looking at an activity of the yeast, is what you're saying.
It's a lot of yeast particulate too. Wow. It's not bitter though, because in greater amounts, like you'll get like a bitterness, almost like an astringency that comes from that yeast particulate. I would say this is a blonde barley wine with coffee, so it's drinking much more like eyes closed. This tastes like a full-bodied dry Irish stout that has much more alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely not low ABV by any means.
No, it's warming. Like I'm.
Yeah. But it's not. But it's not. It's not hot. It's not like
what's it weigh in at? It's got to be like 10, 11?
11. At least 10. Yeah.
11. Right.
Yeah.
Not 10. Right.
Oh,
at
it's 10. I don't know how to read numbers yet.
But I think the thing about it is I've had their, you know, their the stout version of it, the Imperial stout version, which is great. But in this, you know, the coffee kind of stands out differently because it's not against a dark beer.
Right.
which is kind of interesting. I'm assuming you guys are doing similar stuff as well.
Yes, well, I mean, that's the whole point of the, you know, fifth ingredient thing is that it's not a, you know, it's not like a coffee flavoring. It's like this beer is lacking in, you know, like I wish I had something like blueberry. It's like, well, we have this natural coffee that has really good blueberry flavor to it. You know, like let's figure a way to incorporate that just for that flavor, not because it tastes like coffee, you know.
It's a, it's a social experiment as well. Yeah. You know, if you can do a, you know, just for example, like a blueberry wheat for summer and be able to do that without actual
blueberries or flavoring or
coffee. I mean, think what your mind just goes, you furl your brow and you go, huh.
Because, and,
yes, the mic needs to be closer.
It needs to be very much in your face.
I'm trying to look at this beer from all angles, so I'm all over the mic here.
Like,
I wish we were.
I mean,
stereo.
I love listening to podcasts, but at the same time, I wish I could just have, you know, like, I wish they would add like screenshots to, you know, to each podcast like story.
Oh,
you can just like see like these little things, you know, like what is the setting that you're in right now, you know, like it would be helpful.
But I
also like to use my imagination, I guess. You know, it's kind of fun to think about.
Because, I mean, they can picture you however they want.
No, yeah,
and
true.
It's probably better.
But it's
that
funny
way.
Just to even think about, you know, like, you know, like when I listen to like This American Life or anything like that, you know, like picturing like Ira Glass just like sitting on a leather couch like across from somebody talking, or you sitting, you know, like in a wooden room, or you know, it's I don't
then,
know. It's kind
then
of like,
what happens?
You know, I don't
yeah.
know. That's yeah. This American Life private time.
Stay tuned for the next episode of Jared Explains NPR.
Although it is, I always great find it weird show. When you listen to these people forever, then you go look at
and you what, see them, and you're like, no, I wish I didn't do that.
How does that voice
it's
come
wrong.
From that
not
man?
That person.
No, it's wrong. Most of the time, it's, you're like, no, you're not who you're supposed to be.
You don't do that.
You don't look like
you've ruined
that.
My fantasy. That was, thanks
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess
I mean,
that's
Ira Glass
a lot.
Looks exactly like you'd expect
yeah,
him
no,
to,
he
but everybody else.
No.
Everybody else like, no, whoa, that's not right.
That's why they talk.
Yeah.
That's why it's like, do you ever really want to meet your superhero? Like, just let him be your superhero. Don't have to go slap fives with
him. I mean, I want to meet Luke Cage. He's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
He would kill you.
Wrong crowd.
No, but yeah, it's problematic. Sometimes when you meet these people, they're fantastic. And then sometimes, you know, they're completely different on the air than they are off the air. Or right. It's hard, you know, people aren't always the same on and off.
And I think that's actually great because sometimes you can have a beer that's really great on its own with the ingredients that you have, and then you have a coffee that maybe might, you know, it's not what you thought it would be and, you know, kind of threw you for a loop, but there's a certain essence and there's a certain character that you can pull out of it through aroma or the acidity and the flavor, but it just melds so well into a beer style. And, you know, as Wade went on the last segment, you know, just being able to really pull and, you know, the fibers through each of these beans and each of these coffees that we pull out and, you know, us doing it on the brewery side, it really opens up a whole new dimension of getting different flavor profiles from maybe unorthodox ingredients.
Jared's walking away. He's done.
I think comparably, like, you think about craft beer 5-10 years ago, would the East Coast or Vermont or whatever you want to call it, IPA, would people have really like known that was possible? Or would the IPA have been like, oh, the super bitter, you know, like the Goose Island was, you know, kind of prevalent back then when I first got into craft beer. And like, so you see how over time those, even the four ingredients have morphed. And now you think about coffee and it's its own world, its own beverage. Incorporating it as an ingredient, how is it going to change? Are we going to actually find out that like the coffee lager is the shit and we've been sleeping on it this whole time? Like I don't, you know, or the name your style, like mm-hmm. even a style that we haven't even thought about. Like I think about that Alsace that you brewed, you know, like that, because it's a French yeast,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like, the Alsace was inspired by Alsace region of France and Germany. And, you know, using only French and German ingredients and fleshing out through teasing the yeast a little bit, just trying to get the best character from that yeast with just such simple European malts.
And I'm thinking about, like, coffees that would pair with that and how many great origins you could find that would bring out completely different characteristics, and you could literally take that style and do a vertical of like four coffee beers, like potentially. And I think that that's out there. That's out there way more than we've explored yet. And we're going to have that opportunity just because we're doing both under one roof. And so hopefully like 9 out of 10 of those kick ass.
And not 1 out of 4.
Even if it's 1 out of 4 though, like that awesome. Beer was, it was a thinker for me. Mm-hmm. That was different. So it was like big, but not hot at all.
No, it, I mean, what was it like 7.8%?
Yeah.
But just such mild mannered and tame.
I hate what? That's we were talking about Plead the Fifth the other day. Oh. You know, like I hate those, like the, I mean, it was the first time that I had it. I wasn't sure if it was the first time that you had it. Drinking that Plead the Fifth.
This year's, yeah.
No, whenever we drank it at the Toad, what, like 4 or 5 years ago.
No. That was a learning experiment.
Yeah, and it was just like, wow, this beer is great. You know, like, I don't know, it was just like, what is this, like 7-8%? Like, no, it's like 35.
That was a special, that was bourbon barrel age Plead the Fifth. Yeah. Like, that was and a then, whole and then standard.
But that, you know, like we had that in our head, like this isn't, you know, like, because it's not hot. It's not, it's this like
so well super
easy to drink. What? And then the dude said it was like whatever, 11% that it was. And then we just kind of like melted into our chairs. We're like, oh, now we're hammered.
I think we justified our darts that night.
Yeah. It's so funny. But I do hate, like if I have like a big beer, like this is fine. You know, it's not hot. You know, like what we were, the beer that we had earlier, you know, you drink it and you kind of sit on it. Those like bourbon barrels are like the 11-12%, where it has that kind of like bourbon heat where it kind of sits and it just kind of like sizzles a little bit. Or you can feel
sharp.
It reminds you. It's like, don't
do it.
Don't do it.
No matter how much you want to.
Plead the Fifth is just like, yeah, I'm going to ruin
your
life.
Do it.
I'm going to ruin you.
So I've got an interesting question, at least that I find interesting. So it's been 6 months. You guys have been going through your build out. What's been the hardest part over the last 6 months for you guys, either as a team or individually? You know, it's presenting different challenges as you go on. It's kind of one of the things I want to check up with you guys as we move along, and as we get towards opening in warmer months of 2017.
I would say rescheduling the second part of this interview is definitely the most difficult.
It's been very tough, yeah.
But now that we're here, the second most difficult part, you know, it's, and I think
all,
you know,
of it.
We kind of chatted about this because, you know, like, as a consensus, we've all had different experiences as, you know, having different roles and such. And honestly, and I know Wade's definitely chomping at the bit to add some to it, but it's,
I'm just here, man. You know, I'm just here.
Time.
3 seconds. We're going to turn the microphone off and just let him go.
I think Chris turned it off. Yeah.
This is the part where I only speak if spoken to.
But on a, you know, timelines, you know, when you're dealing with financial institutions, you're dealing with partners, you're dealing with investors, you're dealing with, you know, the city, you're dealing with, you know, future patrons and their expectations. Everybody who is involved in either the largest portion or the smallest, most minute way, all has an expectation of how things should go. So there's an opinion to be had, and they all have an expectation of like, oh, you know, you guys should be doing this. Like, it's super quick. And some people go, wow, you know, the ones who I think, you know, quote unquote, get it is that, like, okay, you know, you're taking your time. I mean, it's better to make mistakes up front, you know, learning, like we talked about the name earlier, than to find out the hard way later on. And, you know, as a consensus of, you know, timelines, you know, there's a lot of knowledge to be gained in that time off or in those down periods where it's like slow or it's a bottleneck and you have everything in with for 5 different things going on, but now you're waiting. So all the balls are in their court. Now you're waiting for it. So it's a lot of back and forth. So I would say organization and timelines can be difficult if not managed appropriately. But I think expectations are should be managed, you know, appropriately as well. And, you know, sometimes, like I was alluding to, you know, you have people that, you know, want this yesterday and it's, you didn't give that to me until tomorrow. Like, how does this happen? Like, let's talk
but
time.
Not, but I mean, that's not exaggerating.
It's
and
not.
It's not just once. It's the past year. Yeah. You know, like, so that has happened a lot.
How has that grabbed you, Jared?
I'm not going to talk about it.
He pleads the Fifth.
You've got a feeling.
I plead the Fifth. I do have feelings. But I played the fifth. And no, I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, don't cop out of me now.
Feeling. Wait, I'm talking to you. Whoa. That means you can talk now.
Nothing more than feeling.
I'm speaking to you. Whoa. So you can spoken.
All right, Wade.
I want to hear your feelings.
You don't want to hear me.
Yeah, come on, Jared.
Jared, you're laying on the leather couch.
You got your head on the pillow.
Paint them a picture, Jonathan.
What does this ink blot drawing, what do you see?
How does that make you feel?
Show the doll. So, Wade.
I guess I'll go.
Yeah, Jared's pleading the fifth, so.
Is it really that bad?
No, I just don't.
Okay.
I don't want to do it.
I'm
going to make you do it.
He defers.
I'm sorry.
There's definitely a narrative arc to how I've received some of the delays in the timelines in that.
Sure.
I think at first I was just like, we got time. But I think things change a lot when you leave a position that you've been successful in and you kind of put yourself out there with certain expectations. And then I think I had a little bit of a freak out moment, but I have like the two best fellow members, not partners. It's an LLC. We're fellow members.
We're members, not partners.
We're co-founders / members.
I have the two best co-founders like imaginable. And I think these guys do a lot to right the ship for me. Often intentionally, but sometimes they don't even realize they're doing it. And so now I'm at a place where I feel a lot more flexible now, and I feel like I can look back, and every time we've been delayed, something better has happened.
It's true.
Even
the most recent delay, I'm like, it was a financial issue that ended up being like so much better for us in the long term that I'm just like, okay, if this is going to keep happening this next, month or however longer this set us back, that's good.
We
that's
might
fine.
Mess something up just to get something better.
like the opening date, obviously I think our original, what we
it
wanted.
It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. But I remember when we first said it, we're like, we're going to be open at this day, by the fall or whatever. And it was just like, it was like the first, I think, big setback that was just like, is this ever going to happen? And then it was just like, and then this, and then this. And then we did get those, it was like, because of that first one, 3 months later, we're like, oh, shit. We just saved this or we just fixed that. And it was just like, all right, awesome. And then, kind of happened again. I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
It was like 2 months later, it was like, oh, good. Yep, yeah. That worked out. And so, it's just like, I don't care. We'll open when we open. But it's, if it keeps going like this, then we'll open in a couple of years. And maybe it'll be free.
Yeah, we'll open in a couple of years. No one will be on the hook for any money. We'll start with like $10 million. It'll be, exactly.
Something will happen.
Exactly.
Perfectly.
This is all just a hypothetical. We're not really opening anything. This is like the biggest show.
Oh, no,
ever.
This is not.
It's a thought exercise.
We just wanted to be on a podcast.
Yeah, really. We were like, I think we could get on Chris's show.
This is what we got to do.
Yeah.
We started this like 5 years ago. Planning and plotting. Even before you had a podcast.
Wow. It wasn't just because of me?
We knew. We knew this was happening.
You were a little bit of a kick in the ass, but I...
No, but I love that. I mean, it's... If you just take the negatives with whatever you're doing, you're just going to get mired in them. Right. You have to look at the positives because there's always going to be negatives no matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
Nothing's perfect.
No one knows everything. No one has that crystal ball, except, that we knew that
people
you were
with a lot of money do
5 years ago.
Yeah, well, that.
There you go.
But there's just so much unexpected. I mean, any factor that's involved in the planning and execution of, there's always numerous X factors that each you think constant has. It's such a wild thing. It's not for everybody. And
no.
It's exciting. I think if you're a person that likes to go to the theme park, there's a lot of roller coasters which can get you rip roaring and get the endorphins happening. But sometimes it's all about the teacup ride.
I'm not sure where this analogy is going. I'm
confused.
It's
slow, it's boring, and you want to get the F off.
Oh.
That spoke to me on the, on like a deep level, like an unconscious, like you reached into my childhood just now. That made a lot of sense to me. Like you're like, I don't know where he's going, and I'm just like, I know exactly what he's talking about.
What part of a teacup is slow and boring?
Like, yeah,
I love
people vomit on those.
Well, we
chirp,
we
chirp, chirp, chirp.
Come on.
But I think what's unique about our story, John is absolutely right. There's the teacup ride. What's unique about our story is you hear a lot of people do two steps forward, one step back. Ours feels a lot more like one step back, giant leaps forward, one step back, giant leaps forward, to where, like, I think the questions we would have opened with a year ago and the questions were, and the answers now that we're opening with now are like, it's night and day, and it's a way better situation,
yeah.
I think, for us and for the future of the business, for, you know, our future customers and
no,
for,
and that's what, you know, like
for the St. Paul Quarter, for all of
it. We have, and we've been putting a lot of thought into it. And yeah, it's not just like, well, I need to be open right now. We need to do this as quickly as possible, which we did in the beginning. That's what, you know, like, we got to do this. And then, you know, like, we actually thought about it. And, you know, like, we need to do this the best way possible, not just to be open. You know, this needs to be done right, and it needs to be done well. And we've made a lot of good decisions with that time.
Yeah. So, and it sounds like the partnership is going well, too. I mean, there's got to be ups and downs with that, but sounds like that's going well as part of the process.
There's been a decided and unfortunate lack of wrestling.
We haven't wrestled in a long time, and that's fine because
we
can't
in your new apartment.
Take it.
I know. It's a
there's no
story.
Room. Oh, that's right.
I'm not sure the barrels are going to be good for wrestling.
Don't play footsie
are
with me.
Are you kidding?
Wait.
I'll wrestle you right
oh
here.
Oh, my God. We're going to build a wrestling ring out of barrels.
Oh,
wow.
Oh,
shit. Unlicensed boxing.
I think
can we call the arena the Splinter Cell?
Oh, my God.
Every match will be hosted by Tuxedo Burrito.
Uh-huh.
we'll call it a throwdown. It will just get people out there signing up. They just don't know what they're signing
up for.
You're
going to sign up for a throwdown, but it's actually a luchador wrestling match on top of barrels.
You're going to have tiny hipster baristas ring. Getting thrown around by...
Oh, yes.
My toe stuck in a bung.
By Tuxedo Burrito.
My toe stuck in a bung.
But look
out for the bung holes.
Chris, I don't know how we're doing on time.
But I don't know. We're going.
We're going. I'm actually, this God. Is funny. I'm visioning it. Like, I can see this happening.
Same.
I'm just picturing Alex. We could put an espresso machine right in the middle and actually do a throwdown this
way. I'm just picturing Alex beating the shit out of everybody.
It's like the combination of chess and boxing.
I want to wrestle Alex. I get excited about that idea.
So Alex is a friend of ours who's also... turned himself into the character Tuxedo Burrito, who was the other half of my intergalactic tag team duo. He is Tuxedo Burrito. I am Impossible Waffle.
That means we can be a tag team duo. Me and John.
Well, you have to. Well, one of you can be Terra Taco.
Terra Taco.
Terror. I mean, well, you're more the Supreme Rude Dude. It's a whole thing. Don't worry about it. We'll talk about it.
I know about it. Don't wave me off.
I know you know about it. That's what I'm saying.
We'll talk about it offline.
Yeah, I guess so.
I just want a stuffed pillow of it. That's all.
He does. He makes, I don't know if you remember wrestling.
Oh, I'm very much so.
Okay, so he makes his own.
Of course.
Of his characters.
Well, I mean, why wouldn't
you? I think you've seen him before.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. I think you're just trying to make me feel better. And get me to stop talking.
Well, we're limping to the finish. Thanks, Jared.
Sorry.
All right, so let's do our plugs. So, Fifth Frame Brewing, where are we going to be located?
We'll be located, our retail spot will be down on St. Paul, in between Tapas and the Corner, where the Triple Deuces is now located, or the shell of.
Yeah. 155 St. Paul.
155 St. Paul. We have some floor plans up in the window. If you guys are cruising by,
yeah, walk by and check it out.
It's gonna look like
you'll get to see what Fifth Frame's gonna look like.
Nice. Social media, gentlemen. How can people talk to you and yell at you for not being open yet?
Instagram and Facebook are the most reliable. The
Twitter definitely do
exists. I
just
only because
oh God,
just ruin Wade's life. On
I
Twitter,
administer
please.
The Twitter, and
that's all Wade.
Yeah. I get going on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I really do enjoy myself on Twitter.
I haven't looked at it.
If you want to know what like the id of Fifth Frame is going to be,
it's real.
On Twitter right now.
You really turn trigger figures into Twitter.
The internal monologue.
But, you know, like if you want a short, easy story, look at Instagram. If you want a good story, we have a few more recent about the name change and about a lot of new things that are going on around the Facebook.
Got some Facebook videos up from
a couple videos, a nice little challenge that we did in our space, so you can see the kind of unrefined space that we have right now.
The Merchouin
challenge.
Mm-hmm. That's French.
It's very French.
Instagram is Fifth Frame Brewing. It's F I F T H, not the number 5 T H.
Yeah.
Twitter is.
Oh, I don't know. I think BRB. It's Fifth _ Frame.
Gotcha.
Fifth underscore.
We're
frame.
Real good at
F-I-F-T-H.
Yeah, I think this is definitely your strong suit. So, and you can find me at Stromy on Twitter and Instagram, Food About Town on Facebook, and Jared Foster, Wade Reed, and John Mervine. Thanks for coming over, guys.
Whoop, whoop. Thanks for having us.
We'll talk to you.
Thank you.
Stromy, you're awesome. Thanks, man.
Again, soonish.
Good night.
Good day.
Peace.